10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needs something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Fourth and final hour on this Monday afternoon. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe alongside. Hope everybody's having a good day. Man, it's a beautiful day outside. It was awesome yesterday. Got close to 70 degrees. Another beautiful day here in early February in our fine city. And the team is about to head up to Winnipeg where it's going to be a lot colder. And, you know, when we're talking about the Predators, sometimes it's like sending out the bat signal. It would be the athletic symbol. Okay, the signal, athletic signal, and that's where Adam Venkin comes into play. And we did that, and here he is.
Hello,
Adam. What's up?
Hey guys, how's it going?
I was looking at a video during the break. You know, Rex Chapman is known for a lot of videos on
Twitter. Blocker charge.
Well, he just tweeted out one where this guy was scuba diving, and I don't know, was going to like check his watch or something. And a great white just came and took a swipe and almost just basically ate him.
Ooh.
But he ducked just in time. And I can only imagine. I told Jay's I would have passed out. Well, one, I would never be in that position. Ever.
Yeah, no. Me
he's free diving. He's not in a cage. He's just out there.
I'm good.
Yeah, that's a no.
That's the shark's house.
Exactly.
I was at one point a certified scuba diver.
Really?
When I was younger. Yes.
When's the last time you did that?
It's been a long time. I'm no longer certified. It's expired. But I did enjoy scuba diving.
Did you do a lot of that?
Whenever we went on family trips to warm/tropical places, my father and I would like to go scuba diving. And one time I remember we were somewhere in the Caribbean, and we would go like on the tour or as a group. It wouldn't just be the two of us. You know, there would be, you know, 5, 6, 7 people and a tour guide. So we wouldn't just be on our own, but you know, we would stick together. We would swim side by side, and I remember we were just looking around one time, and my dad tapped me on the shoulder, and I looked over to him, and I see him pointing in the other direction, and I look the other way, and there's a barracuda staring at me, and its teeth are open. And its mouth is open. Its teeth are showing. It was quite terrifying.
Yeah.
Did you go, barracuda?
I did not. What do I look like?
Thank you so much.
Heart.
And Chase has left the building. Thank you. So what were your thoughts after Saturday night?
Oof, that was not a good game for the Predators. And it wasn't necessarily an issue of effort. It wasn't as if they weren't trying hard.
There we go.
This newfangled microphone, I need to get used to it, especially because I'm starting a show on this station on Friday.
That's right.
We'll talk about that, I'm sure. Anyway, that was one of Pecorine's best performances of the season. That was almost vintage Pecorine. He was keeping that team in the game single-handedly. Now, that was their worst offensive performance of the season. If you look at all strengths, not just 5-on-5, but if you also include the power play, they had season lows in shots, shot attempts, scoring chances, high danger / grade A shot attempts. They could not generate anything.
We'll say basically every offensive category.
And then, of course, the big fat goose egg on the scoreboard.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because throughout most of the season, it hasn't necessarily been the offense that's been the issue. It's been the defense and goaltending, particularly the goaltending. So on the night where they get a throwback performance from Pecorine, they can't put the puck in the net. And this team still continues to be without a 3-game winning streak since late October. And that's not going to get it done when you're trying to make it into the playoffs. And as I was driving in, as I stopped at Sonic, as you can see, mm-hmm. and I was listening to the two of you talk before the break, you were talking about, I believe it was Chase who asked, you know, at what point do you have to come to the realization that this team might not have it in them to make the playoffs? I think by the time they get back from this road trip, you're going to have a good sense of that. Just when you consider the opponents that they're playing, I mean, all four teams I believe, are in playoff position that they're playing, all four Western Canadian teams. They are all teams that they're chasing. Every game is big. There's no pushover on this trip. You know, to me, I think anything less than 6 points out of a possible eight puts you in a perilous position.
So what if you win two, lose two?
And you come back 2-0-2 or 2-2-0?
4 points.
I think,
or five. Let's say 5 points, just to make it trickier. So what does that do? Does that change anything?
I mean, I think just based on the opponents, it changes things. Just because you're giving points to teams that you need to catch. It's not as if they're playing. It's not as if it's a trip where they're playing Detroit.
Well, that's why Vegas. That's why that's a tough loss.
Right, exactly.
You give 2 points to Vegas.
So you're giving. If you lose these games, you're giving points to teams that you need to catch. That's right. Why I think if they can't muster at least six, things are going to look dire when they come back. That's just my opinion. It could be wrong. I've been wrong many times before, but that's just my opinion. I think anything less than 6 points, you know, you're going to have to start wondering what this team's true outlook is for the last month and a half of the season.
Right. Well, start wondering is different than at some point. I mean, there's going to have to be a decision. I mean, the deadline is 3 weeks away or so, somewhere around there. Right at it, right? In fact, it is 3 weeks away.
I think 3 weeks from today.
It's the 24th. It's today the 3rd.
Yes. Yeah.
So three weeks from today.
I mean, at some point, you are going to have to close the door and say, all right, well, what are we doing?
What's the approach? I think they need to be what I would like to call a soft seller at the trade deadline, unless they go on a heater in the next 3 weeks and they feel that they might need to add something. And if that's the case, I think they need to be a soft buyer. So they shouldn't go out there and spend draft capital to pick up a person to help them win now. They've made enough win now moves over the past couple of years. The ones at the deadline they've made have not been good, whether it was, you know, Mikhail Granlund or Brian Boyle or Wayne Simmons last year or Ryan Hartman a couple of years ago.
Well, Brian Boyle was fine.
Brian Boyle was fine. But, you know, I look at Mikhail Granlund, for example. And we talked about this last week, Darren, when I was in New Jersey. You know, I think Mikhail Granlund has been revitalized by this coaching change. I just think that he's been used more. I think the style of game suits him a little bit more. He's producing, which he wasn't doing previously. And that's a hard question. So let's just say the Predators continue to hover around let's say in a couple of weeks, they're still not in the playoff spot, but they're still in this position where maybe they're 2, 3, 4 points out. They're still very much in the race, but they're not in the playoff spot. And a decision time is coming on Mikhail Granlund. Do you say, hey, he's been playing well, we're still in the playoff race, we'll keep him as an own rental? Much like, to a lesser degree, but similarly to what the Blue Jackets did last year with Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky. We know we're not going to be able to re-sign these players this summer, but we're playing well. Let's just push it all in. You know,
with what we got.
Exactly. Because the likelihood of Mikhail Granlund being back on this team next year is slim. Just because of what his contract demands are likely to be. He's $5.75 million against the cap this season. He was playing on a 3-year contract. He's about to be 28, I believe, so he'll be looking for something longer. You know he'll be wanting a raise, and this team has enough money and enough term tied up in forwards at his age. And you have Roman Josi's contract you have to factor into the cap as well. So it just doesn't seem like a fit. And they haven't had any significant contract negotiations with Mikhail Granlund. They've had, you know, feeling out conversations, but nothing where anything significant has been passed between the two sides. So I think in that case, you have to get something for him. At the very least, the way he's playing right now increases his trade value. So maybe that third round pick becomes a second round pick, for example, or maybe that C-level prospect becomes the B-level prospect. But I think that at least one of the players that's on an expiring contract, and maybe two, need to be traded before the deadline to recoup some value heading into the future.
Yeah, I just, that's where I stand, is just, you know, you have the guys that it, and I don't know if you heard me say this to him a few minutes ago about the categories of, you have the, okay, the UFAs, so those are probably easier to part ways with. Then you have the guys that you don't necessarily want to, but you know there's some value there, and I say that's like a Yarncroke or Bonino or somewhere in there. Then you have the long-term contracts and the core that you've invested so much in. Do you try and move one of those guys now? And I'm not, and I don't necessarily mean Kyle Turris, because I think Kyle Turris could be off on his own. But one of these guys that, you know, you start the year going, no way they would ever part ways with them.
What player comes to mind when you talk like that?
For me, if I'm naming a name, it's somebody like Arvidsson. You know, I don't think you trade Philip Forsberg. I really don't think you trade Victor Arvidsson, but for the sake of this conversation, you know, Johansson, that's tough to move. Duchesne, you just signed.
Yeah, the hard part, when you look at, at The Athletic, many of our writers have done these trade tier articles where they've sort of broken down who could be on the move, who's untouchable, and it's looking at in season. When you look at the Predators, when I kind of went through that exercise myself, and I think I'm going to write my version of it next week, you look at a lot of the players, a lot of them they're probably not going anywhere, just because of their importance to the team. Like, for example, Pekarinen has a no movement clause. He's not going anywhere. Roman Josi, not going anywhere. Matt Duchesne was just signed, not going anywhere. Ryan Ellis, Matthias Ekholm, Philip Forsberg, probably not going anywhere. You know, Kyle Turris, not going anywhere in season, maybe during the summertime, but in terms of things that are going
to
happen.
And you'd probably have to eat some money.
Right. In terms of things happening this season, there really isn't much they can do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even but the other thing is, you look at all of these players we're talking about, they're all having down years. You know, Ryan Johansson, for example, has what, 5 years left after this one?
Let's see.
4 or 5 years after this one?
He has.
If you're trading him, at his lowest value. You know, are you making a trade just for the sake of making a trade? Just because Ryan Johansson had, you know, his poor season with the team? I just don't think you're going to see a total teardown of this group. That isn't to say that changes couldn't be made during the offseason, but if you're expecting a rebuild or a teardown or whatever, it's not going to happen. It's just not possible. You know, the players that could, I think, be on the move that we're not talking about, this is just my own opinion, if the right offer comes around, one, Cali Yarncroke, and two, Rocco Grimaldi. I wonder if they could be moved out if the right offer for their services comes along ahead of the deadline.
But you're not really freeing up much.
No.
I mean, that's the thing. Those are the contracts you're looking for. Like,
right.
You're getting the production, even though Cali's not, you know, he's out, looks like he's going to be out again against Winnipeg. He's dealing with an illness. But those contracts, what we've been talking about, or that's not helping them, right? That's not freeing up really anything. True?
No, it's not. But you're not going to make any of those. You're not going to make any of those seismic moves between now and February 24th. The work is going to be done during the summer.
I mean, their two contracts combined is what counts for what, $3 million?
Yep.
Yes. So you're not going to make. You're not going. I just can't imagine seeing one of their core players move in the next 3 weeks. I mean, if during the summertime, maybe. But maybe David Poile chalks it up to, all of these guys had down years at the same time. Let's see what happens next year with the full opportunity for John Hines to work his magic. But I don't know.
All right, we'll come back on the other side. I'm going to ask you, why do you think through 51 games we've had a lot of the same conversations about this team, and they get asked the same questions, and that we all know that they're tired of? In fact, that's been brought up many times to Roman Josi and others of, aren't you tired of answering these same questions over and over again? And, you know, they admit they are, but they know that it's coming when games like Vegas or Toronto or others happen, the Anaheim game. So we'll just talk about, like, what's your best guess? I know you're throwing radio darts, but let's just talk about on the other side, like, why does this keep occurring? We'll do that next on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Adam Vinton in studio with us from The Athletic. should always check out his work. Do a really good job. Athletic is always putting out good stuff. So, Adam, I tease going into the break. It's what I see a lot of times, and I understand, from the fans. They're frustrated when things like Saturday night happen. And unfortunately, this year at home, it is just, and this has been going on for a while, it just has not been good at home. There's been a lot of games that have people just leaving, scratching their head, disgruntled, wondering what the heck's happening. They're leaving early. So I understand that from the fans. The fans are doing their part. By the way, I thought Saturday night, man, they were ready to go. It's going to be another fun night in Smashville. They're ready to go. And just unfortunately, they never had anything to cheer for, at least the first two periods. But I thought the atmosphere was good. The front, you know, the front office, the organization, they're doing their part. It's a great environment, selling out these games. Everybody's doing their part. And then you have these games, and like I said, especially these ones at home. How do you begin to try to explain with what's on the line? You go to Washington, you go to New Jersey, not your cleanest games, probably wouldn't win a beauty pageant, but you came away with 4 points, and that's objective. That's the goal. You came away with 2 wins. And on the road, especially Washington, and Vegas played the night before in Raleigh against Carolina, and you get that. And this is not just an isolated game, as you know. I don't need to go through the list. We all know the list if you've been following this team. The ones recently, you know, Toronto and Anaheim, the 2 games against Pittsburgh, Dallas comes to mind, a couple of games. I mean, so we know the list. So how do you explain really what we saw on Saturday night, knowing what's on the line, and just when everybody was starting to feel good again, like, okay, is this where they're going to get going? They're starting a new month. Here they go. And then they get shut out.
Well, I wrote something to this effect after the game on Saturday. It went up yesterday. Now, if you listen to John Hines over the past month and you look for the most common phrases mentioned during his press conferences, number one on the list is mental fortitude. You've been hearing that a lot. It's the number one thing that he has targeted since he came to Nashville. You know, for him, tweaking the system is the easy part. It's getting these players, getting their minds right. That's the hard part. And there has been a significant emphasis on that particular aspect, which is why the games against Washington in New Jersey were encouraging. Because, look, I was at both games. I was watching the game in Washington. I see UC Saros serve it up to Alex Ovechkin. Slam dunk.
Yep.
I see Nick Bonino put the puck in his own net. And I turned to my seatmate and friend and colleague, Stephen Wino of the Associated Press, and said, Predators aren't coming back from this.
Don't forget, Callie Arncroak's clear goes right off Ovechkin's skate, right to Tom Wilson.
Yeah. When it was 3-3 and Bonino put the puck in the net, I turned to Steve and I said, they're not coming back from this. So the fact that they were able to, and then they go to New Jersey in a game that...
Is that just because of what you've seen
yes.
this year?
Based on everything I've seen this year, I thought this was that. I was surprised that they won that game after the way it transpired in the second.
So was I.
So
in fact, you saw people on Twitter during the course of the game when these things that we're talking about were happening. People were saying this basically sums up this season.
Yeah, they started off playing really well. They had a 3-1 lead. They make 2 mistakes. They burn them. The game's tied. They go down 4-3. But when it was 3-3, I didn't think they were going to come back, and they did. And then against New Jersey, there were 5 game-tying goals in that game. Now, they get off to a great start. Mattias Ekholm scores in the opening minute. It's back and forth. They lose the lead. They go down. They tie the game. They go down. They tie the game. They're down 4-3. I think it was 4-3. They're down 4-3 at the second intermission. Sure. Matt Duchene ties the game early in the third period. They go down 5-4. Philip Forsberg ties the game 5-5. They go to the shootout. They win. So there was progress. And Philip Forsberg said after that game that You know, oftentimes this season, they get down by a couple goals in the third period and they'd quit. Those were his words, quit. But you could tell that there seemed to be some belief back in the dressing room after those two games. And I thought something that John Hines said on Saturday morning was very interesting when talking about this in depth. He said that the good thing about this mental fortitude thing, for him at least, is that in his month here, they've had examples where they haven't been able to do it and they've lost, but also examples of when they have been able to do it and they've won. And he said the first step to getting buy-in from players is tangible evidence that if you do this, it will work.
Good things will happen.
You will be rewarded. So I thought, you know, home game, look, I know the sound of hearing these words coupled together, the Predators' home game on Saturday, sends shivers down fans' spines, considering how poorly they've played at home in general, but also at home on Saturdays. So I considered that, the fact that Vegas played the night before, the fact that the Predators seem to be on the right track with in terms of the mental side of the game, I thought we were going to have a good game on Saturday. And as we talked about earlier, they laid an egg. They put forth their worst offensive performance of the season. And I really, and this is what I was getting at with my story yesterday, this stuff takes time. You know, rebuilding a team's confidence, rebuilding their resilience takes a lot more time than John Hines has this season. This season to me feels almost like a gap year.
Why is that, though? This is the same roster. This is the roster that's been through
lot
of wars together.
Yeah, I mean,
of hockey together.
That is the hot button issue, is why is this specific team that has won a President's Trophy, has been to the Stanley Cup Final, you know,
played back-to-back divisions,
you know, played the first game 7 4 years ago in Anaheim and won, made it to game 7 against San Jose, made it to the Stanley Cup Final as an underdog. All of these things. You know, it is hard to say. And it's, you know, I talked to Rocco Grimaldi about it, and he said, honestly, it may have started last year, in the second half of last year. They were up and down. The playoffs did not go well. You know, I'm not sure how much Peter Laviolette was helping in that regard. I can't say for certain, but, you know, it just seems like the best course of action for this group, if they're not going to make the playoffs, is just trying to get their minds right for the rest of the season and then have an offseason to clear their heads, and John Hines can go into training camp on day one and start fresh and hopefully get them ready by next, you know, October, so that's not an issue. I just don't think with the inconsistency that this group has that John Hines has enough time this season to fix it. If they make they could still make the playoffs. I just don't think for them, you know, I just don't think that what it's going to take to get this team right mentally, 31 games isn't enough time.
What do you think is more beneficial for this team, whether the core group stays together, you know, what have you? Is it missing the playoffs altogether and knowing, hey, we stunk it up, it was a bad year, now we have to reevaluate, or barely creeping in but getting knocked out first round?
Well, I think you've seen it in previous years with this team making the playoffs. Especially last year. I mean, they had a great last week and a half or so of the regular season. You know, they had those big wins against Vancouver and Chicago at home to win the Central Division and open at home against the Stars in the playoffs. But, you know, that team was so inconsistent last year that, honestly, losing in the first round, I think, was a blessing in disguise because they could not mask the problems that they had by saying, well, we made it to the second round, or we made it to the, you know, game 7 of the second round, or we made it to the conference final. Like, no, they were upset in the first round in 6 games. Like, you know, the year before they made it to the second round, you know, the year before they made it to the Stanley Cup final. Like, they were forced to look at themselves in the mirror.
I would say that's a blessing in disguise if this year is different. Like, that was the jolt. I see where you're going. Yeah. Like, it's the jolt, but it hasn't jump-started or jolted anything.
No, it hasn't.
So I don't know if it's really a to me, it's a blessing in disguise is if, and unfortunately, it ends in 6 against Dallas like it did in the first round, and it's kind of the jolt of, wow, this was not the season that we were going to have.
True.
And then they come out with their hair on fire this year and we're not having anywhere near the conversation that we're having here through 51 games.
Yeah, I mean, it's really tough. The Predators are in a really tough spot. I mean, we're not talking about this season in the standings. We're talking about the immediate future just because of their salary cap situation. You know, it's interesting how opinions change on certain things over time. When Ryan Johansson signed his 8-year contract extension in 2017, he had an amazing playoffs. You know, I contend to this day that if he does not get hurt, the Predators win the Stanley Cup against Pittsburgh. He was playing that well. So, and you could tell how much they missed him when he was out. So giving him that contract, was it an overpayment? Probably, but who else did the Predators have to fill that role? They had no choice.
I mean, you're not trading Seth Jones,
right? Yeah.
And have a playoff series like that,
right?
Or playoff run like that out of him and not reward him.
Victor Arvidsson is having a rough year, but he scored 34 goals in 58 games last year. He became one of the best scorers in the league over the past couple of years. He's not having a good year.
And a fan favorite.
That contract, when they signed it, it looked like a steal.
No one was questioning it.
No, and I still think it continues to be a steal, even if he's struggling this year, just because you hope it's just, you know, 1 year. But, you know, you look at Matt Duchene's contract. Mm. We were all talking about $9 or $10 million, right?
I was not. No.
No? You never thought that?
Nope.
But, there were reports leading into free agency that he could command that much. So when you saw it was $8 million, you said, oh, well, that's reasonable by comparison, because everyone made it out to seem that he was going to get 9 or 10, and he only got $8 million. Only got $8 million. You know, there are too many underperforming high-paid players this year, and it's not as if though they've got 7. You know, you look at the guys who are unrestricted free agents. It's none of these players. I mean, it's Mikael Granlund, it's Craig Smith, it's Dan Hamhuis, it's Yannick Weber, it's Matt Irwin, it's Rocco Grimaldi. You know, it's not Ryan Johansson or Victor Arvidsson or Philip Forsberg or Mattias Ekholm. Like, you can't walk away from these guys right now. And, you know, it's going to be hard to get out from under these contracts. I mean, you're seeing how it is with Kyle Turris. He's been on the block for more than a year, and they still can't figure it out. And I just think that it's going to be hard for them to do what they want to do unless David Poile is willing to admit, I made a mistake, and I'm going to have to trade Ryan Johansson, hypothetically, and retain 25% of his salary and get pennies on the dollar just so that I can free up cap space to do something else. Is it worth it just to make a change? I don't know. I mean, it's a very difficult position they find themselves in right now because of the way they're playing.
Let's get your reaction to Dustin Byfuglien on the other side. More with Adam Vingan from The Athletic here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Adam Vingan from The Athletic. We'll actually take your calls if you'd like to jump in and ask.
I have a text question,
Adam,
for him, too.
All right. If you have a question for Adam, 737-1025. I know he has a mailbag at The Athletic that he does.
Every month?
We can do our radio mailbag.
Okay.
737-1025.
Bring it on.
Before we get to the calls, you know, you heard us talking about the news. And I had seen some of this stuff surfacing, or at least being tossed around, over the weekend, and one of them is from Elliot Friedman, who joins us every Thursday at 1 o'clock on the show, that there was going to be an end to the Dustin Byfuglien saga in Winnipeg, and it looks like it's getting that much closer to ending.
Yes.
And both parties, I guess, parting ways. What do you make of this story? What do you think is going to happen? Once again, just a lot of questions that we really don't have answers to, but
right.
That's what we do on Sports Talk Radio.
So the news you're reporting is that, I'm reading from Frank Saravalli of TSN, quote, the Jets and defenseman Dustin Byfuglien are working toward a mutual contract termination over the next several days, according to multiple sources, which would formally end his suspension and bring to a close the grievance Byfuglien filed in November. And I believe the issue was an injury, right?
Yeah, well, he had ankle surgery,
right,
in October, I believe.
And the Jets were arguing that, I believe, during his post, you know, his exit physical, that injury was not disclosed or discovered. So they were wondering if whether or not they had to pay him this season.
And then he filed a grievance in November.
I believe that's the Cliff's Notes version of it. But that frees up $7.6 million in cap space for the Winnipeg Jets because they had him on their books and they weren't sure what to do with him because they weren't sure if he was coming back. But if they're agreeing to terminate his contract, that frees up a lot of space for them. I think they're in the same position as the Predators. I think they should sell more than they should buy. But since they're closer to the playoffs, albeit by maybe a couple points, maybe they'll use that money wisely. But Dustin Byfuglien is an intriguing addition to the free agent market. We've seen firsthand the impact that Dustin Byfuglien can have. You know, I remember, what was it, game three in Winnipeg in the playoffs a couple of years ago? When the Predators went up big to start the game and the Jets came back, Dustin Byfuglien had a big hand in that. I mean, of course, there's the image of him hog-tying Roman Josi and Austin Watson with one in each hand, right? Pulling them out of a scrum. I mean, Dustin Byfuglien is a monster. But after this ankle surgery, not playing for a year, I think he's in his mid-30s already.
34.
How much does he have left in the tank? But he can be an incredibly valuable player to a team. If you can give, I mean, look at Ilya Kovalchuk. I mean, look at, you know, look how wonderfully he's playing for the Montreal Canadiens. He was dead in the water with the LA Kings. Mm-hmm. Now the Canadiens are in a place where they could flip Kovalchuk at the deadline and get a lot more back than the Kings, who had to terminate his contract, and he signed league minimum with the Canadiens. So perhaps a team could take a chance on Dustin Byfuglien if he's ready to play at a very low cost. I mean, that would be, that's an intriguing addition to the free agent market.
And he would be a UFA, so he would be out there free and available to wherever he wants to go. Wayne, you have a question for Adam. Welcome in.
Yes, Adam.
Yes, sir.
Some people think that David Poile was not solely responsible for the decision to fire Laviolette. Some think that ownership intervened. What is your theory? And then after your answer, I would like to give you my two cents on what's wrong and how to fix the Predators' problem.
Sure. Well, that's a good question, Wayne. And David Poile, it was an uncharacteristic decision for him to fire a coach midseason. We've talked about that. Very rarely has he done that. John Hines is only the sixth head coach that he's worked with in nearly 40 years in the NHL. And I can't speak, unfortunately, to whether or not there was a power struggle, for lack of a better term, between David and ownership regarding the fate of Peter Laviolette. But, you know, oftentimes ownership does place, you know, a great amount of autonomy in David Poile to make those decisions himself. Whether or not it was the right decision, you know, I personally have my opinion on that. Unfortunately, I can't answer your question as to that particular theory, but oftentimes when a team is struggling, they can't fire all the players, as they say, so they fired the coach. And as Chase mentioned earlier, they played the one card they could play in that regard, yep, and that was firing the coach. So perhaps I'll look a little bit more into it for you, Wayne, but it is an interesting theory. And so you said you had your two cents that you wanted to share.
Yes. I'll say this up front. I think the Predators have multiple problems. But as I watch the team play, the major problem, as I see it, and most people talk about their inconsistent play. Basically, it looks like to me that the team plays when they want to play. They take periods off. They take games off. They play hard some periods. They play hard some games. I think basically revolves, or as I see it, their effort level. Some games, most of the players or all the players give 100%. Other games, you have obviously some players giving less than that. So the problem is not, and the problem is with the players. It wasn't with Peter Laviolette, as I said. David Poile or whoever is going, I think, you're going to have to identify players, regardless of who they are, who are guilty of this inconsistent effort and weed them out. And if they don't do that, if they are unwilling or unsuccessful in identifying these players, then the problem is going to continue. I don't think it's a case of adding players, but you definitely, in my opinion, they need to subtract some players who are rotten apples and are destroying, you know, all, the whole team.
Okay, we'll talk
about
it.
And I'll mention one. I'll mention one that I think, in my opinion, is the major culprit, and that's Ryan Johansson. He has a history of this. That's why he was in the doghouse with Tortorella in Columbus. That's why they traded him. And if you watch him play, if you just watch him while he's out on the ice the whole time, how many times do you see him when he's trying to play defense that he's behind his man that he has responsibility for, and he's reaching out with his extra long stick trying to make a play, but the guy has him beat, and many times it's end up in the back of the net. But anyway, that's my 2 cents.
Okay.
Adam, well, I really enjoy you listening to you when you are on.
Thank you, Wayne.
The game, and Darren, keep having him on.
Okay. Thank you, Wayne.
Well, you'll get more of me starting on Friday.
Well, tell everybody about it.
All right. So, first of all, Wayne, thank you very much for the kind words. I do appreciate all the times I'm invited to be on the air here at 102.5 The Game. I sort of just forced my way onto the fourth hour of the show.
That's okay.
No, he didn't force, because we reached out. We weren't sure where you were. We thought maybe there was something going on at the airport, but signature, yes, before they took off. And if you were just around the corner, we were like,
right,
come on in, because this is what we were going to talk about anyway. So,
right,
yeah. So we appreciate you coming in.
Of course. But anyway, back to what I was saying before. Starting this Friday, Robbie Stanley and I will be co-hosting a Predators show weekly every Friday from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. entitled The Smash Brothers. He and I will be the Smash Brothers. We're very much looking forward to it. We're still putting together our plans for our debut show, but it'll be a lot of fun to have a weekly platform on the air.
Who came up with the name?
I did.
Mm. Okay.
You know,
I heard one of your original names, and I voted for that.
Yeah. My original name was much better, I think.
Are you willing to divulge that,
yes,
or no?
Yes, I am. So for the Smash Brothers, was, you know, Smash Smashville, so you get that Predators hook in there. Also, Robbie and I are avid fans of the Super Smash Brothers video game saga of the Nintendo fighting game. So it worked on multiple levels. The initial name that I had was Apex Predators, which works also on a number of levels, because it's one, it has to do, you know, an apex predator are the animals on the top of the food,
mm-hmm,
change,
yep,
on top of the food chain, not food change. Also, I'm a wrestling fan, so it has some wrestling connotations to it as well. But the Smash Brothers is good too. But back to what Wayne was saying.
All right, let's hold that over. We'll come back and close out things.
Cliffhanger.
With that. On the other side, more with Adam Venkin from The Athletic to close out Monday's edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. All right, Adam, so you're going to address Wayne's second part, if you could.
So Wayne was talking about the consistent effort level from the Predators, or inconsistent effort level from the Predators, and whether or not first of all, one point he made about the players. I mean, David Poile went out of his way during that press conference last month to put this on the players. It was as if he said, he didn't say this directly, but it was as if he said, look what you made me do. Because of the way you're performing, I had to fire the coach. So I agree with Wayne that I think it is a player issue versus a coaching issue overall. And, you know, Ryan Johansson gets a lot of flack. And Wayne is right. He had a falling out in Columbus, which ultimately led to him being traded here for Seth Jones 4 years ago, which is crazy to think that was 4 years ago.
It is hard to believe.
Ryan Johansson is an interesting case, because we know his season has not been up to standard, as has been the case for many of the players on the team. And Ryan Johansson has not been the player that he was in Columbus. He's not scoring 33 goals. He's not scoring 26 goals. You know, if he's lucky, maybe he gets 15 a year with Nashville. You know, I believe his game has evolved as a playmaker since he's been here, mostly playing with Philip Forsberg and Victor Arvidsson. And we've seen when Ryan Johansson has a fire in his belly, he can be dominant. The problem, to Wayne's point, is how often do we see that from Ryan Johansson? Not enough. But it kind of goes back to what we were talking about. You know, Ryan Johansson is having a season that could, you know, the only season that's been worse in terms of, he's on pace to have his worst season since his rookie year, points-wise. Good luck getting out of that contract.
Well, clearly there was a message being sent by the new head coach after the Toronto game, or during the Toronto game.
Yes.
He played 10 and a half minutes. He took three faceoffs. He typically, takes anywhere from 14 to 18 draws a game, plays around 17 to 19 minutes a game. And so everything was cut in half or more than. And then he made the comment, which he's made before, that guys will earn their playing time, right?
Yes.
So there was a clear, and then that increased on the road trip. I think he was at 16 and a half minutes in Washington and 19 minutes in New Jersey. So it was kind of like back to normal and taking double-digit faceoffs.
Yes. And I think John's decision to play him with Callie Yarncroke and Austin Watson was interesting, to say the least. You know, he's been playing with Mikael Granlund and Matt Duchene over the past few games, and I think that's been a better fit for Ryan. But when we talk about players disappointing, there are multiple. I mean, how many players on this team can you say have met or exceeded expectations this season? I can think of five off the top of my head.
Well, David Poile, just because we've had these conversations, he will immediately eliminate Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis.
Correct. Those are two of the five that come to mind.
And then the third line, when together, it's been together most of the year, of Smith, Grimaldi, and Bonino, has been the most consistent line this team has had all season.
And those are the other three. Those are the five players on this team, in my opinion, who have either met or exceeded expectations. Everybody else has underperformed.
I mean, there's guys that really didn't have. I mean, Yakov Trenin has come in and played
right
nicely. Why do you think, by the way, they're not playing him? Why is he there?
Well, it looks
but not
like
playing?
He's going to play tomorrow, just based on some of the drills they were working in practice. Yakov Trenin was skating with Colton Sissons and Colin Blackwell, and Austin Watson was functioning as the extra defenseman on a pair with Matt Irwin. So it looks like Austin Watson will be out in favor of Yakov Trenin tomorrow. So perhaps that
seems like there's a rotation going on.
Yeah, but Trenin was playing so well before the bye week when he was sent back down. So I was a bit surprised that he hasn't been able to get into as many games. He's been playing recently because he played on Thursday because Callie Yarncroke was sick.
Yep.
And Callie won't play tomorrow, but it sounds like he'll play at some point during this trip.
And I would put Ekholm in there just because he's had to bring along Favreau.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, he's had to deal with a rookie
season. I think that's fair. I think I would
so
put
he's
Ekholm
had to work
there
with him, and so I would put Ekholm in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's fair.
But to your point,
that's a quarter
enough
of the team.
Right, it's not enough.
There are three quarters of the team that's not playing up to capability.
Right, hence on why they're on the outside looking in, because it's just not enough. Now, the question is that going to change in the remaining games? As they approach tomorrow night, there'll be 30 games left after they start this road trip.
Yeah.
So what's going to change?
Your guess
is
it going to
change?
Your guess is as good as mine.
We're about to find out.
Giddy up. That's all I can say.
Once again, Friday nights.
You're welcome.
6 to 7.
Yes.
Starting this Friday.
Yes.
Check it out. Smash Brothers. Adam Vingan and Robbie Stanley. By the way, Adam will be on Preds Insiders tonight, the 6 o'clock hour.
I'm basically taking over the station.
Basically.
Yes.
Something like that. Adam, thank you as always.
My pleasure.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic. That will do it for Monday's edition of Darren Donick and Chase. We'll be back at it tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. You have a great rest of your day. I look forward to talking to you then.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.